All right, everybody. Happy August 16th, 2019. Welcome to the show, Icons. I've been telling you guys about this for weeks now, but we are going to have four of the most influential national leaders on the show today. I'm so excited about this particular themed show. And we're starting out bright and early with the incredible Lori Jean, the CEO of the world's largest LGBT center here in the city of Los Angeles. And co-hosting throughout the day, I'm going to have Diane Abbott. And we've had Diane on here before. And of course, Diane is just co-founder of so much. MECLA, APLA, HRC. She has been a power lesbian since the 70s. Hard to believe. And they're both in studio. I won't tell people your age, Diane.
Thank you so much, John. I think they can figure it out now.
And after these two power lesbians, Lori and Diane, we're having John Davidson on. John has been a litigator for the LGBT community for well over 30 years at the ACLU, at Lambda Legal Defense, and now at Freedom for All, LGBT, Freedom for All Americans. That's the new group. And then finally, the incorrigible, and it's his birthday. We're all going to sing a big happy birthday to him when he comes on the air. David Mixon from New York City will be on the air. So that is our lineup for the day. I hope you stay tuned for the whole 2 hours. It's going to be an incredible day, gang. So let's just start right out. Diane, you're going to help me co-host here.
Sure.
And I've got Lori Jean, and I've got, like, you know, 20 minutes to find out everything about her. I know a little bit about her. You were a FEMA lawyer, right? San Francisco at one point?
That's right. I actually started with them in Washington, D.C., and then they promoted this young open lesbian to head out to San Francisco and be the deputy regional director of their largest and busiest region.
Wow. And that was not fulfilling for you? Because when we first met, we were on the board of Lambda Legal Defense, right. In the late 80s.
Yeah. It was very fulfilling for me, but I found over time that my volunteer activism was so much more fulfilling than my work as a lawyer. So I decided I wanted to work full-time for the movement.
Wow. And what was the first job? Was it the center?
It was the center. And there's sort of an interesting story. I actually applied to be the executive director of what was then called the Human Rights Campaign Fund in 1989.
Wow.
And I made it to the finals with Tim McFeely. And they selected him, even though the staff unanimously endorsed me. And I thought, okay, why did this happen? Was gender a part of it? Maybe. But the truth was, I didn't have anything on my resume that distinguished me from Tim. We both had been lawyers. We both had done similar kinds of activism. So when FEMA offered me this job in the region, I thought, well, I better take that because that'll give me managerial experience at a huge level so that the next time I applied for one of the big jobs, my resume would be the strongest. And that's sort of what happened at the center.
Wow. Now, I have told this story on the air a few times about the first time I met you. And because I remember I was on the Lambda Legal Board and I was this, you know, little twink from Orange County, Laguna Beach. And I walked in and I met you on the Lambda Board. And I said, hi, I'm John Duran. I'm from Orange County. And I absolutely know nothing about feminism. And you seem to know a lot. So what should I know about it? And you said, here are a list of books for you to read. You told me The Well of Loneliness and a couple others. Go read these, and then you can talk to me.
Wow. I don't ever remember recommending The Well of Loneliness to anyone. But
it was a downer. It was a downer. But that was my first encounter with you.
Well, we were both very young back then.
We were very young. That would have been 89, I think.
30 yeah, maybe
years ago.
Even before then, because I think I was in Washington still when you came on the board.
But, oh, wow.
But yeah, we've lasted a long time, John, despite reports of our demise.
I know, it's premature. We're still here. Diane, when you were one of the co-founders of HRC, is that right? I mean, MECLA was the predecessor for all of it, right?
MECLA was the first one.
Okay.
It was the first political action committee dedicated to lesbian and gay rights. There was no BT at that point,
no,
or Q at that point in time.
Or I, or double I, or double Q, or yeah.
Yeah.
And then out of MECLA came a whole lot of other PACs all over. Well, California had the Alliance in San Francisco, BAMEC in San Jose, USDEC in San Diego, ECHO in Orange County, CAPPAC in Sacramento. But out of all that came the idea of creating a federal PAC, right?
Well, actually, the federal PAC was developed early I think, before lots of the local ones that happened. And it was a few members out of MECLA that were working with people in D.C., and that resulted in HRC.
Who? You remember? Was it Randy Close? No. Randy Close, Gene O'Leary came later.
Gene actually was working at that point in time for...
National Gay Rights Advocates, NGRA?
Yes, I think that was it.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, she was. And then she moved on to D.C. But out of MECLA at the time, Richard Kaplan, who is long gone, he was one of the key people that started working in D.C. with people there. And they sort of copied the MECLA model.
Hmm. And created HRC.
Yeah.
Were you at the March on Washington in 87?
I was, and at the March on Washington in 1979.
You were there in 79.
I had just gone to Washington to go to law school.
Oh, my God, the very, very first March on Washington.
Yeah.
So the March in 79, that was pre-AIDS. That was pre-anything.
That's right.
We were still officially sodomites. Those were the days.
Well, I think we were still sodomites in 87, too. But
yeah, that's true.
But not in California.
Not in California.
We were the first ones to pass consensual act.
What was the March in 79 like?
You know, John, it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. I had just come out the previous semester, my last semester of college, and I went off to Washington, D.C. to go to law school and had my first lover, and we marched at that march with about 100,000 people.
Wow.
And I had never been so inspired. I had never felt so much a part of a community. I hadn't really realized how much of a community we had then.
Wow. That was the very first of four, 79, 87, 93, maybe three. Maybe we've only
There's been a few others that didn't get national support, really.
Those are the big three. When we come back, more talk with Lori Jean from the LA LGBT Center and Diane Abbott co-hosting. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's the incredible Lori Jean. Lori, you remember that speech?
I do. Wow.
Where was it?
I think that was, well, gosh, I can't remember whether that was at An Evening with Women or...
What was it, Jason? You found the clip.
It was a speech at a Trump rally, wasn't it?
An anti-Trump rally.
Oh, anti-Trump all right.
Rally. There you go. Living the good fight all the way up to current day.
It's up on YouTube.
That's awesome. You know, Jason here is my millennial producer, and I am committed to having this intergenerational discussion. And we try to do it every week. And so we lost Jinx Spears recently, publisher of Lesbian News, and we lost Bob Craig some time ago, publisher of Frontiers. And I try to tell young people, there was a time before iPhones and the internet and
never heard of that time.
Yeah, I know. There was a time where in order to find each other, you had to hunt. You had to go out to the bars or to the clubs to get these news publications.
That makes things more exciting, don't you think?
Well, it wasn't exciting. Half the fun was the hunt.
Yeah.
that is true. Laura, you must run across so many young people, you know, and all three of us now are now, you know, we're getting long in the tooth and starting to, like, reluctantly, some of us, including me, pass the torch to the next generation. What contrast do you notice, or what are you noticing as you're talking to young people?
You know, there's such a level of freedom and self understanding in ways that when I was a teenager, you know, I didn't know any other LGBT people. I didn't even realize I was one.
Right.
And now these young people, many of them are coming out when they're in their early teens. And we see both youth who are experiencing homelessness because their own families have rejected them, and their experience, of course, is very different. And then we see young people who have come out in their families, have been accepted, are proud, and expect to have an equal place in this society. And I'm very excited to see what they will do to change the world further.
Yeah, you know, and I always wonder, and maybe this is just a philosophical debate not worth having, but I always wondered, because we all had to struggle, like we had to fight first our own selves to accept who we were, mm-hmm. to overcome religious teachings, maybe family expectations, you know, our own conscious. I mean, the battle started with me versus me, and then to go out and try to find others. And but out of all that came this like fierce level of I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to battle. I'm ready to take on anything. And I just wonder if young people who get to come out at 11 or 12 or 13 and have a GSA, maybe they don't have that same commitment to the LGBT world. Maybe they're more successfully integrated or assimilated into the mainstream community, and maybe they're going to take us other places. And maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I think it's probably okay. And I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. But I also mourn a little bit for the phenomenally passionate community that came together and fought because we had no allies. Right. We had to go through those struggles. And I'm a fan of Terrence McNally's views about some of the losses that assimilation and acceptance will bring. Mm. But if I have to make a choice, of course, I'll take those losses because we need to be full and complete members of our society.
Well, and this is what we fought for, right? We mm-hmm. fought for the right or to be like just like anybody else and be given an equal shot. But there's something to be said about trying to maintain our culture and our unique contribution to culture. Mm-hmm. Diane, you're looking at me funny.
Well, because here in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, I think that we become more and more integrated. But when we look at the Midwest and the South, it's a very different experience. And in those states where, yes, we have the right to marry, but that doesn't mean we're protected against discrimination, including firing, housing. It's not so easy. And that's why so many young people, I think, come to Los Angeles, because here they can be who they are. There's still a fight.
Yeah. You know, I've interviewed people who are African-American, raised in the South, raised in the Deep South. And to them, the bigger struggle is against racism and homophobia. That's a common thing that they share, that to them the battle is against racism and they just happen to be gay, and being gay is not the paramount battle for them. And just an interesting aside.
I think that we have racism within our own community, and certainly we have a lot of prejudice against transgender people, and especially against transgender people who happen to be African American.
Yeah.
It's hard for them.
Lori, when I was a volunteer at the center back in the 80s, it was on Highland. It had two phones. We were taking calls about STIs, and that is not the center today. What is the center today?
Well, you know, I interviewed in that building on Highland in 1992 when I first became the executive director, and it was the best there was for its time. But it was a converted motel, and it was a dump. But they were building a new building. Actually, they were renovating the old IRS building in Hollywood at that time. And they were, when I started in January of 93, we were one building in Hollywood. We had an $8 million budget and about 125 or 30 staff. Today, our annual budget is $141
million. Wow.
We have 800 staff.
Wow.
We have 10 locations all over town. And we're serving close to 50,000 client visits every single month. And so it's a phenomenal institution, but that has kept itself connected to the grassroots of our community because they're walking through our doors every single day.
And you've been at the helm since when?
I started in January of 93. I took a little break in the middle.
Right.
But this second time around, I've been here for 16 years.
So 25 years Lori, thank you for taking us from one little motel to 50,000 people being served a month. That's amazing.
Well, I had a lot of help along the way. And this Los Angeles community is a community of tremendous vision and generosity that hasn't really gotten its just due in our larger movement. Yep. People think about San Francisco or New York. And really, Los Angeles led the way in many ways. It was here in L.A. that our contemporary movement started, with the Mattachine Society and Foundation in 1950 and 51. Yep. And it was here in L.A. in 1959 that we had the first riots against police.
Yep.
No, not the Black Cat.
Cooper's Donuts in downtown.
Yep. Closed down Main Street for a day.
Yep.
And these are things that lots of people don't know, because we didn't have the Village Voice press that was covering it. And or the Los Angeles LGBT Center. It was among the very first centers. It's the oldest continually active center in the country, and we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year.
Well, I hope to have you back to talk about the celebration of the 50 year. That would be incredible. When we come back, gang, we'll be talking to John Davidson and his journey. I want to thank Lori Jean for coming by. Lori, thank you so much.
So happy to be here, John.
Happy to have you. All right. Thanks, gang, for tuning in here on Channel Q.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, gang. Wow, wasn't that a great talk with Lori Jean? She is amazing. To take the center from a one-room shop with two phones to, what did she say, Diane? 800 employees and $140 million budget. I just... blows
right
me
around
away.
There. I think it was 800 employees and 2,000 or 147,000.
Million. That wouldn't even get you her salary. And now we're moving to the next icon, John Davidson from Americans. I'm sorry.
Freedom for All Americans.
Yes, Freedom for All Americans. Yeah, Jason, you learned how to use the applause button. I'm so proud.
I'm learning it.
That's awesome. So, gang, let me tell you a little bit about John Davidson. So I was a law clerk back in the early 80s for Diane Abbott, who is seated over here to my right, and got tired of commuting from Laguna Beach all the way to West LA. So I went to clerk for Georgia Garrett Norris, the late Georgia Garrett Norris and the late Marjorie Rushforth in 1984. And they said, we have this new case, Vincent Chalk, a school teacher with AIDS. The Orange County Board of Education is kicking him out. And we're working with this lawyer named John Davidson from Irell and Manello, right?
Yes.
I was 85. I think that's the first time I met you, which is 35 years ago, John. Was that your very first LGBT case?
Well, I got involved in working with the ACLU while I was in private practice. In a case that went to the Supreme Court, the R-Line case, it involved a teacher with tuberculosis, where the Reagan Justice Department was arguing that people with infectious diseases could not be considered protected under laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of disability. And although the case was factually about tuberculosis, their brief was all about AIDS.
Mm.
And so Susan McGreevy, who was a lawyer at the ACLU at the time, enlisted my help in writing the first amicus brief, friend of the court brief, to the U.S. Supreme Court about AIDS, trying to educate them about how it actually was not contagious in the way that many other diseases are thought of, that it was actually very hard to spread, and trying to make sure that they understood the science. But at the time, there wasn't like a lot of compendia of information. And so I remember my office was just full of morbidity and mortality weekly reports from the CDC.
Oh, God, remember
and
that? Oh, my God.
Journal of American Medical Association articles as we tried to like distill it all for the court.
The judge back in the Chalk case, Judge Gray,
I think
it was William Gray, the late William Gray. I remember when he ruled against the County of Orange and reinstated Vince Chalk, he made some statement. I don't remember exactly. I was a very young person back then, 26 years old, something along the lines of your theory about how HIV can be transmitted in the classroom is as likely as men from Mars invading the planet or something like that. Something like that. Something really amazing. When we come back, gang, we'll be talking to John Davidson about his long and distinguished legal career fighting for LGBT people here on Channel Q.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the musical Hairspray, I Know Where I've Been. We thought that'd be a great song for you, John.
Thanks.
You have been to Supreme Court, I think, more than any other LGBT lawyer in this country. How many times? We just counted. Six?
Five times.
Five
so
times. And let's talk about those for a second. So I think the first one was what?
Romer versus Lawrence.
Now, Romer versus Colorado was a case about an anti-discrimination law that Denver passed that the voters of the state of Colorado overturned.
Right. They passed an amendment to the state constitution to prohibit any government body in Colorado from enacting protections for lesbians, gay men, or bisexuals. They could have protections for heterosexuals, just not for lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals. And so it repealed the city ordinances in four cities, I think, in Colorado at the time. And the U.S. Supreme Court decided that that was a violation of equal protection in kind of the most fundamental sense, that if you're saying that the government can't protect a certain group of people against discrimination, but could protect other people against discrimination, that was itself a denial of equal protection of the laws.
Per se. It makes sense.
But
was that 5-4?
That was, I think it was 6-3.
6-3.
But Justice Kennedy wrote that decision as he did for almost all of the good decisions that we got from the Supreme Court since.
Right. And then Lawrence v. Texas.
Lawrence v. Texas.
Overturned Bowers versus Hardwick. Now, Bowers versus Hardwick was upheld the sodomy statute of Georgia, but it kind of held us back as a people.
Yes,
a long time.
I mean, it. You know, even though sodomy laws weren't enforced very regularly in terms of like you had to catch people having sex, but they were used as justifications for denying people certain jobs or for denying people custody of their kids by saying, "Well, you're a criminal by definition." And therefore you're not fit to parent and you can't be a police officer or a school teacher. And so it was really important to erase this idea that our sharing our love with other people was somehow a criminal act.
Yeah. Diane's nodding her head because she was a lesbian parent in the 70s and trying to figure out how to keep her kids.
Yeah, it was very challenging. And there was really no organization at that point in time that was doing anything or an acknowledgement that lesbians could be mothers. That in itself was a huge, huge concept for people to understand.
So Lawrence v. Texas overturned Bowers. Was that a 5-4 too?
Or yeah, that was a 5-4.
Again, Justice Kennedy.
Wrote the majority opinion.
God bless Justice Kennedy. Sacramento, California, right?
Correct.
And appointed by Ronald Reagan or
Ford?
Bush
maybe?
Or Gerald Ford?
I think.
Oh, God. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God that happened. And then after that, what was
Probably next was when we lost, Dale versus the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh.
Which
I don't remember the facts of that. I mean, I guess it's pretty obvious.
It involved somebody who, James Dale, who had been in the Boy Scouts for many years.
Eagle Scout.
And, right. And he was an Eagle Scout. And then he was going to become an assistant scoutmaster when somebody saw an interview with him at from his school newspaper talking about him being gay and him kind of doing stuff at the school to support other gay students. And he got a letter saying he was being kicked out and could no longer be involved. Lambda Legal brought a lawsuit. Evan Wolfson was the lawyer, and they ended up winning at the New Jersey Supreme Court. And then the Boy Scouts took it to the U.S. Supreme Court, which overturned the decision by 5-4. And
who wrote this one? Rehnquist? Was it Rehnquist as the Chief Justice? I'm thinking.
God, I'm not remembering if it was him. perhaps Scalia. I don't remember.
One of them.
And they held that the Boy Scouts had a First Amendment right to choose who was going to speak on its behalf.
Mm.
But, you know, the battle against the Boy Scouts discrimination didn't end. And instead, we tried to go put pressure on them, political and economic pressure. And eventually, they got rid of their policy. And now it's up to the individual den or troop leadership as to who they're going to choose. But the Boy Scouts does not prevent someone who's gay or trans from serving.
You know, the Boy Scouts here in Los Angeles just started to admit girls.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? I guess because they do things like camping and campfires and things that the Girl Scouts don't cover. That's what I was told anyway. I'm not sure that's the reason, but
they are slightly different programs.
Yeah.
So that one we lost in the short term, but, you know, ended up
winning in the
outing
long.
The Boy Scouts as a discriminatory organization, and that helped ultimately change the policy.
Right. And then marriage. I guess marriage would be the next one.
Right. So first the Windsor case that held that the federal government had to recognize and treat equally marriages of same-sex couples that were lawfully entered in states as states began to allow those. Or that were entered in other countries.
And that was Edith Windsor. That's a 5-4, I assume, with Kennedy again.
Right. And then, of course, the Obergefell decision, which declared that all states had to allow same-sex couples to marry and recognize marriages that had entered in other jurisdictions.
You know, John, it's a shame you don't have anything to do in your spare time. thank you for charting the entire movement's history in your legal work. That's amazing.
You know, we've come very, very far, and I think a lot of people these days don't really know the history of what it was like to lose custody of your children, to be fired, to be denied housing, to be denied services, to not be allowed to serve in the military.
Right.
Something transgender people are still experiencing
even now
under this administration.
Even now. When we come back, we're going to get back with John Davidson about the current work that he's doing with Freedom From All Americans. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I picked this song for you, John.
Thank you.
I picked this song for you. You are our Rocky Balboa. I told Jason, get the Rocky theme show. Rocky, oh, and he's like, Rocky Balboa?
I said, what? Rocky? Yeah. And he said, yes, because he's a fighter.
He's a fighter for decades and decades and decades. Welcome back, gang. If you're just tuning in, here in studio, Diane Abbott is co-hosting with me, and we're interviewing John Davidson from Freedom For All Americans. I think before the break, I said From All Americans. I should have said From All MAGA Hats, maybe is what I meant. That's what I meant. John, tell us a bit about the current work that you're doing, litigation.
So I joined Freedom for All Americans as its chief counsel a little over a year ago. And that organization is about 4 years old and works to secure comprehensive and effective sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination laws across the country. And so I've been doing both kind of legislative lawyering, helping try to get good laws passed in states and at the federal level, and to fight against laws that would create big exceptions to anti-discrimination protections. What I've been working on most recently is three cases that the U.S. Supreme Court's going to hear argument on October 8th. They all raise the question whether existing federal employment discrimination law, which bars discrimination based on sex, encompasses discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Mm. So these incredibly important decisions that the Supreme Court will be making that will really determine whether if you're discriminated against at work because you're LGBT, can you go into federal court and make a claim or not? Now, we've been fighting for years to get express protections, and there's a bill called the Equality Act, which passed the House of Representatives this year, which is a major achievement. But people really need to be putting pressure on their senators to try to get it through the Senate as well.
Right.
Elections have consequences, both in terms of what's the composition of Congress and will we be able to get good bills through, and will Congress stand by as this current administration takes action against our community again and again and again, whether it's the military ban or efforts to allow government contractors to raise religious defenses to fire people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Huh. In any event, these three cases that the Supreme Court's going to decide, I was in charge of coordinating all the friend of the court briefs that were submitted to the court. There were 49 of them on our side.
Wow.
Got incredible number of supportive voices from 206 major businesses, 151 members of Congress, 84 local governments and mayors, the AMA, the American Bar Association, the American Psychological Association, the National Education Association, the American Association for the Advancement of Retired People. I mean, we got the kind of mainstream organizations to say to the court, if you apply the conservative principle of textualism, of looking what the words are, it is sex discrimination to fire a man because he is attracted to other men when you wouldn't fire a woman who is attracted to men. It is because of his sex, at least in part.
Right.
And if you fire a transgender woman who was fine when she identified as a male, but now that she identifies as a female, she's not okay for the same job. Well, that's also discrimination based on sex. So it doesn't require some change in the understanding of sex. Even if you think sex just means male or female, it is a violation of the laws prohibiting sex discrimination to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The challenge we face is Trump has put two very conservative people on the Supreme Court, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. So there's now a majority of conservatives on the court. And the question is, will we be able to reach them to do the right thing here?
Right.
Or will they vote based on politics? We've seen in a number of other cases challenging Trump administration positions on immigration and on a range of other measures that the court has been fairly deferential to the position. And one of the things that's sad here was one of these cases that involves a transgender woman who was an embalmer and funeral director who was fired when she told the owner of the company that she would be transitioning. The EEOC originally brought that case, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and they won at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. But now that the case is before the Supreme Court, because the funeral home took it up, the Department of Justice now represents the EEOC, and they are filing a brief today saying it's legal to discriminate on the basis
of gender
identity.
Thank you, William Barr.
Again, as I say, elections have consequences.
So everybody's holding out hope that John Roberts is going to become the new swing vote.
And we've seen him do that in several cases. He was the one who basically said that the census could not include a question about your immigration status, you know, whether you were a citizen or not, at least without a better explanation than the government was giving. And then there wasn't time for them to try to manufacture something before the census forms needed to be printed. And so it's not going to be on there, which would have had very serious impacts on the counting, getting an accurate count of how many people there are in this country, which is very important for purposes of apportionment of the state's representatives in Congress and of getting various kinds of funding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we have any hope for Clarence Thomas helping us out or any of the others. So I guess John Roberts, man.
But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And one of the important things I think is important that people need to know is that win or lose these cases before the Supreme Court, we're still going to need Congress to act, because this case is about employment discrimination. And even if the court accepts that it is sex discrimination to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity, that only helps us with laws that currently bar sex discrimination. There is no federal law that bars sex discrimination in public accommodations, so restaurants and stores. But there is no law that currently bars sex discrimination in federally funded services like adoption agencies. Hmm. And so the Equality Act would add prohibitions on sex discrimination into those, and then would specifically enumerate sexual orientation and gender identity as forms of sex discrimination. So it's going to be important to push for that law regardless of what happens at the court.
Diane, do you feel like we're back in law school? I mean, I could listen to the professor all day.
I could too.
I feel like I should be taking notes.
Fascinating. It's really fascinating.
Notes. John, we have less than a minute left. A website, people want to learn more about Freedom for All Americans. Where would you direct people?
www.freedomforallamericans.org.
There you go. You can join the fight, gang. It sounds like the battle is ongoing. If you want to know where to give your cold, hard cash, that's one of the places right there.
Thanks so much, John.
John, thank you for coming.
Diane, lovely to see you.
So good
will you
see
come
you,
back
John.
Again in the future I'd and tell, give to. Us an update on all these cases?
Definitely.
That would be awesome. All right, gang. When we come back, I'll be talking to Diane Abbott gossiping about her love life. So you sure want to come back for that here on Channel Q.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back, gang. Well, we just finished incredible interviews with Lori Jean and John Davidson, and very soon, David Mixner will be calling in. But while we wait for his call, I'm in studio with Diane Abbott, who stands on her own 2 feet as an icon.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You're iconic, babe. You're iconic. You've been every guest who's walked in, they give you an extra big hug. Extra big hug. You're iconic.
Well, we fought together.
Yeah, that's true. We're all warriors together. It's very, very true. I know you were I don't know if you know this, you were my very first guest on my very first show, and that's happened in September of last year. We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of doing this show, and you were the very first guest.
Time goes quickly.
I know, it's so true. And we're getting up there. You were just saying during the break, your son David is now 50 years old.
Just had his 50th birthday.
Wow. And I remember when he was a kid. And he was like, well, let me think. What? David's 50, so he was born in...
68.
And I met you in 83, so he would have been 20. No, is that right? 78? 15. I met him when he was a teenager. And now he's 50.
Yes.
And I'm still 48.
Yes. Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing.
Yes, I know. And I, on the other hand, am 48.
Okay. Thank God our listeners can't do math. I figured that all out. You know, we have watched so many of our organizations come and go. I mean, Lori Jean and John Davidson, both very active with the ACLU, with Lambda Legal Defense, and there was National Gay Rights Advocates with the late Jean O'Leary, National Center for Lesbian Rights with Kate Kendall for many years. So many legal organizations that have been at the forefront of the movement. And I mean, that is what it's about, at least these fights. It's politics and law. Politics and law.
I think it's politics, law, and grassroots.
Yeah. I would throw, and here's the thing I've been arguing lately. It's politics, law, and culture. Because the media, television, movie making, music, they reshape the culture in a way that makes LGBT advancement possible. I mean,
I think that's true.
Yeah.
That's because people who are out help to change music and entertainment.
Speaking of out, we have somebody joining the phone, calling in, and Jason's about to add him. David, are you there? David Mixner?
Mr. Duran, how are you, sir?
I am sitting here with Diane Abbott, and we're going to first have her sing a little something to you. Ready? Hit it. The incredible Marilyn Monroe. Diane Abbott is sourcing
Marilyn
Monroe.
I thought she was dead.
Not for you, honey.
Happy birthday.
Hi, Diane.
Hey, David. Happy birthday, honey.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you on the show. We've had quite a day, David. We interviewed Lori Jean. We interviewed John Davidson. And now we get the iconic David Mixner. It's amazing.
Bringing up the rear.
Okay, I can't even go there. No. Where's that beat drum? But I'm bummed. That's what we should have played for you.
I got to figure that one out.
Yeah, David, you.
What a great podcast you're doing, John. Congratulations. It's so needed.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we're really happy. We are broadcasting on AM radio, FM radio, HD2, and of course, podcasts. All the different formats all across the country in 28 cities right now. So it's amazing. David, you first got active with the movement, I think, after Woodstock, right? I hate to date you,
no,
but this is the 50...
Woodstock. This is my 60th anniversary of organizing.
All right.
I started as a volunteer for John Kennedy in 1959.
That's the year I was born, babe.
Thank you for sharing. This is the end of the call. Bye.
All right, so you're a volunteer for John Kennedy. I'm being birthed. And were you
And I was active in the civil rights movement in the early 60s and with Dr. King in the South and went to jail a couple times.
Yeah, that I knew about
the,
you. The Peace
then the
March.
Vietnam War.
Vietnam War, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Woodstock was on my birthday, and I got backstage passes as a birthday gift.
Oh, my God. What's the most memorable part of Woodstock for you?
The Purple Dot Acid and Janis Joplin.
Wow. There you go. That's really, really cool. Now,
but my political life really didn't begin until I met Diane Abbott, though.
And with the old Mecla crowd. But, I mean, while all this is going on, David, are you out as a gay man to yourself?
No, I was very, very closeted, extremely closeted, and terrified of being re-outed
right.
Until I was 30 years old.
Wow. And then it all broke loose.
Well, you know, I figured I had worked for peace and worked for everybody else's freedom. But what bought me out, John, and Diane will remember this because she met me just after I came out, was Anita Bryant.
Dade County. Dade County. Yeah, that's what. And then, of course, No on Prop 6 in 1978. That happened shortly thereafter. David, we got to take a quick commercial break. We hang on. We'll be right back after this break. All right. Thanks for tuning in, gang, to Channel Q.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Great speech, Big Daddy. That's you at the Empire State PAC.
My goodness.
Yeah. We got some of your favorite David Mixner clips. I, of course, had to delete some of the more, you know, spicy ones.
Well, those are the sort of the ones that just you and I know, John.
David, we were talking before we took the break about Anita Bryant bringing you into activism. Tell us about that.
Well, I think Diane also was heavily involved. That's when we first met and became best friends. It was, I think, the beginning of the modern-day political LGBTQ movement. It brought a huge number of people out of the closet, including myself. Anita Bryant was runner-up in Miss America. I want to point out she wasn't Miss America. She was a loser. She was second place.
And, I love that.
And that she put the initiative on the Dade County ballot in Florida, making it legal to discriminate against LGBTQ people. We really didn't think it would pass because this was the first initiative used against us ever. And she got, what, Diane, upper 60s percent in the vote?
She did.
And then it spread to California.
Diane, you can tell what happened then.
Oh, well, she was so excited about her success in Florida that she decided to come to California and to introduce a law that would ban teachers who were homosexual or who supported equal rights for homosexuals from teaching in California state schools. Got on the ballot.
And if they were discovered or accused by anyone of being one of those two things, it was mandated by this initiative they had to appear in a court trial before the school board. And they had to prove that they neither were homosexual or supportive of homosexual rights. And if they couldn't, they lost their teaching credential for life.
Wow.
And when we started, initially the community didn't want to fight it. Anita Bryant had won in Dade County, St. Paul, Wichita, Eugene. And there was a segment that said, oh, we can't win, we can't win, we shouldn't spend money. But that segment didn't include people like Diane Abbott and Troy Perry and Gail Wilson and myself and Pat Denslow and Peter Scott. We said we have to fight it.
Thank God you did. And you beat it 2-1.
We won 54% of the vote. We even carried Orange County.
That's amazing.
And no one thought we could do it.
And you got
and
Ronald.
It's interesting. I got to give credit to Troy, Reverend Troy Perry of the MCC Churches. Diane, if you remember, no one would write us a check.
Yes.
And Troy went down to the federal building and fasted for 17 days until we got $100,000 in the bank, which was a lot of money back then.
Yep.
And he wouldn't accept pledges. It had to be in the bank. And then we all went down and had an agape meal with him when he broke his fast. He got us off the ground.
That's amazing. That is amazing. You got Ronald Reagan to support our side.
Yes. We went in to see Governor Reagan. They didn't want to meet with us because they told us he was going to support the initiative, which he was planning to do. But our bright people, legal people, found a technicality where any student could accuse their teacher of being gay, and they would have to go through this process. And I said to Governor Reagan, I'm surprised that you're supporting this because it would create anarchy in the school. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, if a teacher gives a kid a failing grade or a disciplinary problem, all they have to do is accuse their teacher of being gay, and they run the risk of losing their teacher credential. I said to the governor, I said, children will run our schools. It will be an anarchy in our schools. And what was it, 2 days later, Diane, that he came out against the initiative based on that, I think it was?
Yeah, he used the privacy, you know, we should stay out of people's bedrooms. And he came out strongly in opposition to Prop 6.
David, you got time to hang with us for just another segment? We got to do another quick commercial break. All right, gang, we'll be right back talking to David Mixner here on Channel Q.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Great words, Big Daddy, David Mixner. So thanks again for joining us, David.
It's an honor to, Joan. I mean, being on the radio with you and Diane, it just doesn't get any better.
Honey, let's talk a little bit about Peter Scott, if you don't mind, because I know, you know, you and Peter did that campaign around No on Prop 6, and he was your partner, and it's such a huge loss for the community when both Peter and David died. I think it was 88, 89 or so.
89. Well, Peter and I and Diane were best friends, and Diane was with her ex and living in the valley, and we spent every night there planning how we could get closer to freedom for LGBTQ people. And he was an amazing man who was sort of the intellectual and guru of a number of us. Wouldn't you say, Diane?
I would absolutely agree with you. Yes.
And he is one of many, though, whose names we'll never know in the history books. Well, a lot of people that Diane and I worked side by side with who were taken early by the plague and the inaction of our government. And they are people who, like Peter, who fought up to the last dying breath for freedom and equality and a cure for HIV AIDS. And they are thousands of names who we will ever know. And we're here by the grace of God. Many of them would probably be in our place today if they had survived. Don't you agree, Diane?
I absolutely agree. I think that the battle to try to get help, support, social services, drugs for AIDS patients in the beginning was so difficult, and so many really sacrificed themselves in the process.
David, you know, I'm sorry, David, there's some irony. You went on to do the campaign for military service, and you were an anti-war, anti-Vietnam War guy, and then you went to fight for LGBT people's right to join the military. Some irony in that, right?
Well, I mean, I said that God was cruel to me. I mean, I'm a pacifist, and I ended up spending a good deal of my life fighting for the right of LGBTQ people to serve our country. Not serve in the military, but to serve our country.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that it would be wrong and self-righteous and immoral for me to pose my personal beliefs on other people without them making that choice themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that, we have to understand, is the purpose of a movement, and we have to be careful with our self-righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency to say, oh, I came out before that person, or that person isn't as good on the issues as I am. The fact of the matter is, there's only one reason for a movement and for all of us to come together, and that is to create a climate that will change minds, that will make it easier for people to join us in the struggle for freedom, and make it easier for those who are still in the closet to come out, no matter what their race, their creed, their ideology, or personal beliefs. None of us has a claim on the truth. Truth changes every day I get up. We get new information. Hell, I used to think there were just 9 planets.
Yeah, that's what we were all taught.
If I can say something, John, if I may, before we run out of time. Diane and I dealt with a time when many of our people and friends had forced lobotomies performed on them by their families. Involuntary lobotomies because they were a member of our community. Thousands of them were performed. In one institution in California alone, 4,000 lobotomies were done in LGBTQ people in 1 year. And we have gone from that to where, when AIDS broke out, funeral undertakers would not bury us, dentists would not treat us, doctors would not treat us, many hospitals would not accept us, home care workers would not come into our homes, and this community responded nobly and heroically and courageous and set a model for future generations. But now, in Diane and mine and your lifetime, John, we have gone from forced lobotomies to where we get to witness a man run for president of the United States who just happens to be gay and is taken very seriously.
Miraculous. Truly miraculous. Yep.
In one lifetime.
But a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears to make that happen.
And sacrifices. Lots. On a lot of people's part. I know the sacrifice that Diane made raising four children, constantly under the threat that they could be taken away from her by the law, legally, watched her go through law school at night and raise four kids and never once failed in the battle for freedom. She is a remarkable pioneer, and I live in awe and admiration of both of you.
Oh, very sweet.
That's so nice. And you know, we feel the same about you. Really.
Well, I hope so.
You've done amazing things. And not only that, I wish we had more time, because I think how you've changed, you're always doing the same thing, but change the things that you do to make them happen. Books, plays, one-man shows, always raising money for this community. It is so moving to me, David, and I am in awe of you.
Well, thank you. But, you know, Trump proves one thing. Our battle is never done. And as I turn 73 today, you know, it's going to be the next generation who's going to be judged whether they pick up the banner or not.
Very, very true. That's odd because, you know, Diane was just telling me she's 68. So
she is. I thought Diane's 58, aren't you, Diane?
Oh, I know, honey. I'm 48.
No, that's my age. At least on Grindr, anyway. King, we are running out of time. David, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on your recognition tonight at Walt Disney Concert Hall by the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. And thank you for joining us. I hope we can get you back another day.
What an honor to spend time with you both.
All right. That's it for today, gang. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be here next Friday on Sidebar with John Duran.